Brad Malikian instead? Would he still be alive? I ask, and Nick Carroll takes a few minutes this time, allowing me to drink another vodka grape-flavored coconut water cocktail and watch Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You, Madonna's Ray of Light, and R.E.M.'s Losing My Religion. What I think, just from observation, is that Andy's drug abuse had roots well beyond the purview of the surf industry. But the surf culture has been enabling drug use for 50 years. It was enabled, nay, encouraged, among AI's parents' generation. And it was exalted through the romanticizing of great surfers and their drug habits. Michael Peterson, Hackman, good God, on and on and on. And by the myth-making around the Brotherhood of Eternal Love and other smuggling and selling networks. Put a booming industry and million-dollar pro-surfing salaries on top of that, and well, boom. AI just fell into this matrix of enablement in which his addictions were able to flourish, and he hasn't been the only one, just the most famous. It was an appalling thing, and I think it laid a kind of curse on anyone who bore any kind of witness to it and did nothing in response. Some of those people are still walking around today under the delusion that either they did all they could for him, or it was all Andy's doing, and they had no part in it. Others have made real changes in their lives as a result, to their credit. I think overall, drug use in elite surfing has become less acceptable post-AI, but that matrix of secrecy and enablement still exists, weakened, but it's still there. And the last little pieces of my cock certainty vanish. The final bits of Shakespearean grandeur. The outermost drips of my amusement. The love story is just a lie. It's like Donald Trump and Melania Trump, nay, Navs. Fake. Artificial. I slump in my chair and read the sentence. I think it laid a kind of curse on anyone who bore any kind of witness to it, again and again. I knew I was cursed. I knew in the deepest part of my heart that surf journalism was profanity, that I would have been better off hunkering down with Hezbollah, following them to Syria even. Andy Irons is no more than a cautionary tale. Michael Thompson, an impossible dream. Those early surf explorers who glassed cocaine into fins and bought surf companies bad examples. And the Peruvians who first surfed and felt the magic of coca. They were just pushers. No better than drug dealers who loiter outside of junior high schools, pressing the most vulnerable into lives of servitude. I ask him one more question about the recent potential cover-up. He writes a beautiful response, but all off the record, ending with a poignant thought. There's a new mantra underpinning the whole secrecy thing in the surf industry. That is, it's all okay, everyone does it at some time, as long as it's not an addiction. The idea that a great lie may be in the process of being told by omission, that may be part of the same enablement that helped AI blow up so horribly, doesn't seem to penetrate many skulls. Nor the consequences of perpetuating such a lie, which they all should know by now. This isn't the foolhardy 80s or whatever. And I push away from my computer and stumble downstairs to mix a last, or maybe last, vodka grape-flavored coconut water cocktail. Chapter 17. Master of Two Worlds. So it's all over. I'm standing at the zinc kitchen counter that I had insisted upon, aesthetically, even though sea air attaches to zinc and corrodes it almost immediately, looking at the pockmarks in a daze. Love story. There is no love story. There's nothing but dullness and tragedy. Tragedy in the dullness and dullness in the tragedy. The foolhardy 80s. That's exactly what I wanted for surfing today, the bold sin, the unhinged parties, the open, even disdainful mockery of those who were not part of the smallest, hardest, shallowest subculture, the complete and utter lack of care for what the future may bring. The opposite of conservative, the ostentatious. And before that, before the 80s rock and rollers, the smuggling surf heroes, those who set out across the sea, running away from crowds and feeling what they loved most was being co-opted. Those who created their own Shangri-Las where they could surf and surf and surf and smuggle cocaine to pay for more surfing. And before that, the post-war Malibu kids who shucked conformity from their lives and ordered their priorities around one of the most pointless things ever. A thing with no future, no perceivable economic benefit, no political clout. A simple, shallow, fun thing that didn't make any real sense. And before that, the Polynesians who would stop crushing each other's bones for a moment and run en masse to the ocean to ride waves in total and reckless abandon. All work is reported to have stopped when the waves turned on, even if it meant starvation. Ancient Hawaiian culture was rigidly stratified, but in the water, when surfing, none of it mattered. Kings, peasants, men, and women each enjoyed the pointless together. And before that, the Peruvian fishermen who came in from the day's fish, cheeks full of coca, and had fun for maybe the only time in their ugly, cold, perpetually shrouded in cold mist lives. Because nothing is as fun as riding waves. Nothing is as fun as surfing, and goddamn those who desperately try to squeeze the life out of it all. Who try and turn it into something it never was and never should be. Timid, bourgeois, hidebound, conservative. I picture Michael Thompson in his new San Clemente home, with his towering achievements and his burning failures, having basically been ejected from the surf industry for being too flamboyant. I remember him glowing about Elmore Leonard. Characters. You've got to have characters. Elmore Leonard kind of characters. Characters that do something. The what for is in the characters. The story is in the characters. And they're so fucking hip. So fucking good, it's actually unbelievable. So fucking hip, so fucking good, it is actually unbelievable. Like a South African surfer starting a global fashion empire. Like Mike Boyum discovering G-Land, smuggling cocaine, and meeting some mystical end. Like Jeff Hackman, glassing cocaine into his fins and buying Quicksilver. Like Andy Irons, who caught the surf world on fire for one brief moment and was just as quickly extinguished. Surf history is littered with fabulous characters, the most fabulous tied inextricably to cocaine. And I'm staring at the corrosion pox in my poor zinc, and I'm sipping the last of the last vodka grape-flavored coconut water cocktail, since I'm now out of both grape-flavored coconut water and vodka. And it dawns on me, finally, the fabulous characters aren't interesting because of cocaine. Cocaine is interesting because of them. And suddenly I have the urge, for the first time in my life, to write fiction. The surf industry CEO and brand manager, team manager, executive vice president, head of global marketing, covering up the latest cocaine overindulgence or accident, can sue the shit out of me for trying to crack the real truth. They can, and they will, because the surf industry is ruthless, and as a bonus, the particular brand the kid surfs for hates me the most. But they can't touch me if I write the greatest cocaine surf fiction ever. Something that will make Michael Thompson smile. Something that shines a light on what we really are. Something that dispenses with the lie, and allows the love story, even if it is the dullest and most tragic love story ever told. Now, that really sounds like Shakespeare. I run back upstairs, stumbling again, throw my computer's lid open, and open up a new document. The computer screen is there, blank, but I feel inspired. I'm going to be a surf novelist. I'm going to make literary surf art. After an hour of watching more music videos and playing a game of Grand Theft Auto on my broken phone while getting ready to write, an email pops up on my screen from my best Australian pal and biz partner. It reads, "The WSL is using a giant blow-up Tyrannosaurus Rex with a man inside it to try and win a Webby. It's on Facebook Live." I Google Webby and see it's like the Academy Awards of the Internet, or maybe the Golden Globes. I log on to Facebook and watch a strange, insecure boy sitting in a chair on Santa Monica's beach with a sign begging for people to vote the World Surf League's website over the NFL and professional wrestling. The Tyrannosaurus is called Shredosaurus. The insecure boy is saying, "Come on, vote for us. We're better than... what's the NFL? Oh, the football where men hit each other and stuff. We're sick. We're way better than that. Vote," and Shredosaurus paddles out and gets some bombs. I hurry over to Beach Grit to post, "Barney, the WSL wants a Webby," and the words flow fast and furiously. I am inspired. I'm a machine. I am a surf journalist. It takes me exactly 6 minutes to write it up, find a picture, and post the story. I sit back, read, and chuckle at my own work. It's good, and I deserve a reward, so I head back downstairs for another cocktail before realizing that I finished everything. All the grape-flavored coconut water. All the vodka. Damn it. I fish in the fridge and find an old Stella Artois stuck in the back corner. I don't drink beer on principle, but beggars can't be choosers, so pull it out and decide to drink it at the beach. The road is mostly empty as I saunter down the hill, and the sunset is straight from God's brush. All manner of orange, pink, red, fire, passion, glory. I sit on a wooden bench that overlooks my favorite wave on earth. It's breaking, but not very good. A handful of older men on soft-top longboards are making assholes of themselves, but at least it's something to watch. A dolphin jumps out of the water. An airplane flies one more lonely circle, towing a sign that reads, "Cheetah's Gentleman's Club." A mom and dad finish packing up their beach wagon while their two children throw sand in each other's faces. And then my phone buzzes in my pocket. I fish it out, accidentally bringing the Stella with it, but thankfully it lands on the bench and doesn't hit the ground. Drinking dirt would be gross. I look and see a Facebook message from my foil, Ian Cairns, the father of professional surfing, the one-time bronzed Aussie, my foil who dislikes actively provoking riots and gutter riding. We had just gotten into it again, this time over stand-up paddleboards, or SUPs. They are an absolute abomination, in my opinion. He likes them. I wrote a story declaring stand-up paddlers should all die. He posted on Facebook that he loves stand-up paddling, if only because it differentiates him from the gutter writer. His fans hammered me with all manner of "go to hell" and "shut up, kook." I enjoy the vitriolic back and forth, but nobody else ever does. Nobody, apparently, except Ian Cairns. His note reads, "Good day, mate. Nice to joust. It's a fine Aussie tradition that keeps us honest." On a serious note, the hashtag #NoNukeSatSano story is serious, and we could do with some help to make some noise and put the brakes on storing nuclear waste at Sano. I'm back Saturday from the SUP retreat and would be happy to meet to discuss. Joy floods my heart. Now here's an issue I can get behind. The San Onofre nuclear power generating station, just south of Trestles, had been pulled offline by the plant's owner, Southern California Edison, when a 2012 steam generator leaked radiation. It has since been decommissioned, but 3.6 million pounds of nuclear waste are still on site, and the current plan is for it to be buried there on the beach. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Burying nuclear waste on a beach, which also happens to be on a fault line, which also happens to be spitting distance from some 20 million people. But Southern California Edison is notoriously corrupt, as is California's Coastal Commission. It's mind-boggling that this is even a possibility, but it is, and this seems like the most fun fight ever. I quickly message back. Oh, Ian, I love tossing barbs back and forth, and it's so rare in our surf world for people not to take things so personally. Let's fuck SoCal Edison up. We should get Eddie Rothman involved. Eddie and Ian Cairns have a volatile history. The two have clashed for years, all beginning in 1975, when Australians first started competing in the North Shore surf contests and destroying the competition. Ian gave an interview to Surfer after winning the Duke Kahanamoku Invitational, where he declared, "We're number one," referring to Australians as opposed to Hawaiians. He said, "We push ourselves harder than Hawaiians," and that North Shore locals had stagnated. Fighting words don't come any more serious than those. Rothman had just co-founded Da Hui, a club of North Shore locals intent on not letting invading foreign hordes usurp Hawaiian resources anymore. They wore black shorts and slapped the shit out of anyone who looked at them sideways. And when Ian Cairns landed in the winter of 1976, Rothman and Da Hui were ready for him. There were death threats, teeth knocked out, threats of the Hawaiian mafia getting involved. Cairns spent a month locked in his hotel room before an uneasy peace was finally brokered by Eddie Aikau. Da Hui still strikes fear into visiting surfers' hearts, and Eddie Rothman was re-infuriated about the whole situation when the documentary Bustin' Down the Door was released in 2009. It told the story of that 1976 winter, but Rothman didn't like it. Bustin' Down the Door? There was no fucking door to bust down, he told me on his North Shore veranda with an angry growl. He was particularly angry that one of the movie's main characters, Rabbit Bartholomew, suggested that he had gotten beaten up by a pack of Hawaiians at Sunset Beach. You think it would take a group of us to beat him up? Ha. It would take maybe one. Maybe. And my phone buzzes again. Ian has responded. You hit on a huge idea. Enlist Eddie Rothman in the campaign. He's an environmentalist, and what's halfway between Fukushima and San'o? Sunset Beach. Brilliant. And is this it? Has this been my destiny all along? Cocaine led me to this moment right here, this bench. Cocaine brought me to myself. Surf journalism is going to save the world from nuclear waste, or at the very least Southern California. Surf journalism, Ian Cairns, and Eddie Rothman. Now that is heroic. I reach down, pull off one of my Reef's Mick Fanning beer bottle opening sandals, grab the Stella patiently sitting next to me, and pop its cap. It's good. Refreshing. My mind is racing, plotting, building the story that will surely win awards. Maybe even a real Pulitzer. The characters are just too good. Better than I could ever create. The bronzed Aussie and Fast Eddie? Eat your heart out, Elmore Leonard. My mind is racing so fast and so far that I don't even taste the usually unmistakable tang of dog shit. But I wouldn't have cared even if I had. Surf journalism is going to save the world.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Cocaine Plus Surfing, a sordid history of surfing's greatest love affair. Written by Chaz Smith. Performed by Tom Pyle. Executive producers Rena Ayer and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Copyright 2018 by Chaz Smith. Sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.